Radiotopia.
I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
My first cat's name was Teddy, and he was just like my baby boy, like my little brother, my little baby.
My first pet was a cat named Lily, and she was the kind of cat that would let me, as a little clumsy three-year-old, carry her around under her arms, and she never complained. She'd make herself like this little rag doll just so I could hold her.
My first dog was named Blackie. She was a big black dog, and because we were allowed to run wild during the late 50s, she seemed to know that that probably wasn't the best idea and always stayed with me and by my side. But Blackie got into a little romance, and she was not fixed because back then people didn't really do that as much, and she got pregnant. And my dad, one day, just took her away. And when we heard that Blackie was gone, my sister and I had such nervous breakdowns, screaming, crying, that he went and brought her back.
Is there anything more memorable than the bonds we've shared with our childhood pets? For a lot of us, Fifi wasn't just our French poodle. Patches wasn't just our tabby. And Charles Nelson Reilly wasn't just our parakeet. They were our best friends in the whole wide world. From PRX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil. Today, tales of kids who, if they could, would spend every waking moment with their four-legged friends. And when they're not with them, they're busy writing about them.
Aww.
So sweet.
I was a lonely only child, which probably should have been a song.
That's Jen Ponton.
Not only did I not have any siblings, but I also happened to live in an area of town where there were really no kids. It was all just kind of like elderly couples. So I was just a weird kid who had no social skills, who very much interacted with people the way an adult did. And that, like, I mean, there may as well have been a kick me sign on my back.
So Jen searched and searched for friends who couldn't make signs, or for that matter, kick hard.
I had hamsters, and you know, these were animals that by and large enjoyed my company and enjoyed being around me. And they were very much the recipients of all of this like love and enthusiasm that I had to give. I would say that animals were pretty much my only real friends.
And Jen took every opportunity to advocate for her real friends in ways her classmates never did for her.
When I was in third grade, I was pretty much the physical manifestation of neon puffy paint. I was loud, fun, weird, and basically excited to do literally anything at any time. Very enthusiastic. Still am. So, didn't really have any friends. And I did, however, have great relationships with my pets and with animals in general. I had a cat named Rainbow. My relationship with Rainbow was entirely different from my peers for the sole reason that it was, in fact, the only relationship that I had. So that year, I had an assignment to write a paper on what I was an expert on. I Love Animals, written by Jennifer K. Ponton, age 8. Hello there. I'm Jennifer. I just love animals. Do you? You know, animals are a very special part of our world. Think about it. You see, without animals, you would not have a cute, cuddly hamster, or a cute, playful puppy, or a pretty goldfish, or a kitten. Anything! Boys and girls, I want you to do something. You see, I want you to close your eyes and imagine that there were no such thing as animals. Are you imagining? Well, I hope you are. Because this is serious. Now, stop imagining. Did you know that if there were no such thing as animals, you would not be alive? Well, boys and girls, let me tell you something. Did you know that we are animals? Well, we are. Except we are a different kind of type. But if the cute, cuddly kind of animal were only gone, guess what? There wouldn't be any Saint Bernard. You know, the kind of dog that has a little barrel around his neck and saves people's lives. Next subject. Are you nice to your pets? I am. Usually, I'm very sweet to my pets. Sometimes I get a little frisky and hug them too tight. And maybe a little now and then I might hit my pets because I get too mad at them. If you treat your pets that way, please change your attitude.
The purpose of the paper was to tell people how to be better with their animals. I bet you dollars to donuts that the true underlying reality of this piece was an allegory for how people should treat me. Because this was really around the time that my social status was going even further down and people were like not even just definitively neutral about me. They were actively deciding that they didn't like me and didn't want to hang out with me and they should probably decide to make fun of me. So I think this was a way to lift myself up as a person who could commune with other creatures and look, I'm worthy of being liked because my cat likes me.
Let's get on to the next subject. Brain work! Do you know lots and lots of animals? Well, let's make a list. Here, I have a list right here for you. Here we go. Cheetah, squirrel, seal, mongoose, owl, elephant, zebra, lion, monkey, tiger, eagle, shark, prairie dog, antelope, turtle, sea urchin, water vole, otter, kingfisher, perch, fruit bat, parrot, birdwing, butterfly, sloth, margay, roadrunner, kangaroo rat, rattlesnake, worm, mole, jellyfish, jays, reindeer, wolf, brown bear, lizard, salmon, thrush, fox, rabbit, frog, gull, penguin, kangaroo, caterpillar, hawk, and a shrew. Uh-oh, kids. Our time is up. Oh, well, that's the way the cookie crumbles. Well, goodbye. See you in my next book.
Jen would have been happy with just about any pet to love. But Adam Rubin, he had very specific requests.
What I really wanted was a cat or a dog, or maybe a monkey. Something you could really, something you could play with, something you could pet. But my parents refused to get me a cat or a dog or anything bigger than a fish. And we idolized the hell out of our fish, but they were just fish.
And then, one day, Adam and his sister's fortunes changed.
Not to be too exact about it, it was the 26th of December, 1989. We remember that date because we celebrated that date as one of the most important dates in our collective childhoods, me and my sister. I was 10 years old, and for Hanukkah, my parents said that we could go to the pet store and pick out a guinea pig. This was a huge deal, and we got a guinea pig. We got Spunky.
Adam was determined to have the same deep connection you might have with a dog with his guinea pig.
Now, Spunky was kind of treated like royalty anyway, and not only because we had a wide collection of tiny hats for her, but because every night we would actually give her a plate of fresh vegetables, and she ate off the same plates that we did. Our dishwasher had a sanitizing cycle, and I think that's how my mother justified it.
And if Adam could have brought Spunky to school with him every day, he would have. But instead, he had to find creative ways to bring her into the classroom.
I had actually already used Spunky in many different class projects that she totally did not belong in. I wrote about her in French class. I made a toothpaste in French class, Le Dentifrice de Spunky. She was in a video I made about the Mayflower. She was in a video that I made about smoking. I think I used her once in a project in sixth grade for Black History Month.
But none of those projects got Adam as close to Spunky as he ultimately wanted. Then, in high school, Adam came up with a way to understand his guinea pig, or any guinea pig, better than anyone ever had.
In ninth grade, I took this class called Introductory Physical Science. It's something that everybody had to take. And for our first major assignment, we were supposed to do a science experiment of our choosing at home and write a report about it. Now, this was my territory. This is where I was going to shine. And so I found that report, and I'm going to share it with you tonight. My hour as a guinea pig. Introduction. She sits in her cage, staring out into emptiness, for what can become hours, but what seems like days. Does she have a secret she's not ready to share with us humans? Or is she just mentally overcoming boredom? That's the problem with guinea pigs. One never can tell. It was partly the fact that the guinea pig is such a complex, misunderstood creature. And it was partly the fact that I happened to have a guinea pig on hand, Spunky, that I decided to pose the following hypothesis and then test it. Do guinea pigs get bored? The only way to find out was to become a guinea pig myself. So that's what I did. I laid out a rectangle of tape on the floor to represent a cage, and I decided to stay in the cage for an hour and record my thoughts. Because science. It's valid. So, but first, before I got to that, the part of the experiment that took the longest, and it shouldn't have, determining exactly how large the cage should be. So back to reading from the report. Here's what I wrote. It should be proportional by volume. But how would I go about finding Spunky's volume? Or my own? I could use Archimedes' method of sitting in a full bathtub and measuring the volume of water which overflowed. But it would be very difficult to catch all the water. Besides, how would I get Spunky underwater without drowning her? So instead, I decided to do something that would look a lot more complicated. I divided Spunky into a collection of three-dimensional geometric shapes, and I measured her in one very long and awkward morning, and I calculated Spunky's volume And as I reminded my teacher in the text, I calculated her volume to the nearest thousandth of a cubic centimeter. I then did the same thing with myself. So I added it all up. I did a proportion. I know, this is what you have time to do when you don't have friends. Finally, the hour had come. So I brought down to the basement, I brought some bread, some water, a stopwatch, and paper and pencil to write down my thoughts, which were as follows. As I clicked down the timer button to start the watch, I stepped into the cage and said, I am Spunky. It had begun. 60 minutes, 0 seconds, started. 59 minutes, 1 second. My tolerance level must be a great deal lower than I thought. I am already so bored after not even 1 minute that I have started talking to myself. I hope I don't go insane in an hour. And just to show you that my teacher cares, when she was grading my lab report, she wrote, I do too. Thanks, Mrs. Newsom. 51 minutes, 37 seconds. Ate bread. It tastes bland. I wish I had pretzels. 43 minutes, 45 seconds. Just like Spunky is sometimes startled by sudden noises, I was startled by the sudden roar of the hot water heater. 39 minutes, 16 seconds. Realized that I was only standing up because I could, not because I wanted to, and sat down. 31 minutes, 9 seconds, moved food dish to more satisfactory location. 30 minutes, 54 seconds, ate bread to celebrate move. 13 minutes, 38 seconds, I want to watch television. I want to leave the cage. I want to see other parts of the house. 6 minutes, 40 seconds. I think the insanity is kicking in. I have started singing the Honey Nut Cheerios commercial at the top of my lungs. 0 minutes, 0 seconds. Done. Leaving the cage at the exact second the timer reached zero, I said, I am Adam, not Spunky. And the spell was broken. Because science is all about spells. My conclusion is that, yes, guinea pigs must get bored. As a result of this experiment, I have decided to let Spunky out of her cage to sit on the sofa more often. If she wants to, she can watch television. So I'll never know what Spunky thought of the report, although I think I actually read it to her. For those of you who are scientists, you can tell, and even if you're not, you can tell this is overall, it's a pretty shitty experiment. All I did was sit in a rectangle for an hour. I received a grade of 108%.
I spent a long time on the assignment. In reality, I absolutely don't, because I didn't really do anything to enable me to understand her better. I just forced myself to get bored for an hour and then extrapolated that if I got bored after an hour, Spunky must hate her life.
As it turns out, Adam was so fixated on Spunky that he never noticed he'd been living with the pets he'd wanted all along.
Technically, I grew up with 6 cats in the house, but they were in jars. My mother has a PhD in anatomy, and one of her professors was getting rid of apparently 6 kitten fetuses in formaldehyde. And she said, oh, don't throw them away. They're fascinating. I'll take them. And they were in my basement my entire childhood. I didn't know this until I was in high school. And my sister and I found them one day. They were just in a box. We just never opened the box because the box didn't look interesting. And there they were, these 6 kittens in jars. We could see their eyelashes. It was very creepy. Not only did my parents not get me a cat or a dog, we had half a dozen kitten fetuses in the house.
Of course, Adam wasn't the only one who grew up in a house filled with animals that weren't exactly cuddly.
October 19th, 1999. I have to warm up my tortoise, Aristotle, when I get home from school. Aristotle adores the house I made him. He hasn't come out of it for a week. I want to call and get him a checkup to see if he's hibernating.
As a kid, E.B. Bartels was no stranger to living with not-so-furry friends.
I grew up with all kinds of strange, unusual pets, partially because my mom has very bad allergies. But I had a pet tortoise whom I adored. He wasn't very loud or affectionate, but he was very curious, and I loved just sitting for hours and hours just watching him sort of sit under his heat lamp and eat lettuce and wander around. And his name was Aristotle because I thought he looked like a very wise old man.
Caring for Aristotle was now EB's new philosophy for getting through the week.
My dad was married before, so I grew up with three older half-siblings, so we had the same dad, but have different moms. So I grew up with them coming over to our house on the weekends, and it was really great because I would have three older siblings, and I really loved having them around, but then every Sunday night, they would leave to go back to their mom's house. I felt like our house got very, very quiet, and I felt very lonely, and I think I felt even more acutely what it was like to be an only child.
EB was so desperate to fill the house with noise that she wasn't just content with adopting pets.
February 4th, 2000. I don't get Mom. Dad got an awesome job, so I thought the chances of us adopting a kid would be greater, but she just yelled at me for looking at adoption agencies online. February 20th, 2000. Today, I went on the Faces of Adoption website to check on the three kids we were interested in. Randy, age 10, Nikki, age 7, and Nathaniel, age 11. All three of them had been adopted. I have mixed feelings about this. I am very happy for them, but a little sad for me.
When I was in seventh grade, it was when I really started to realize that my parents, though they had humored my inquiries, were not going to adopt another child. And so when I realized that wasn't going to happen, I really went overboard on my love and obsession with Aristotle because I knew that was pretty much the best I was going to get. So I should love him and appreciate him and enjoy him as much as I possibly could. And that was when I spent a lot of time writing stories about his fictional life and his like memoir, how he came to become part of my life. And it was the summer after seventh grade, before I started eighth grade, when the terrible thing happened.
If I couldn't adopt a younger sibling, I had the next best thing, a tortoise. That was until June 30th, 2001. My father just lost Aristotle. He decided to take Aristotle on a walk, and he went in to make lunch, and then Aristotle was gone. We've been looking, but he is nowhere. I keep waiting for him to come around the corner and say, "Hey, I'm hungry, how about some lettuce?" But he hasn't yet. I'm afraid he won't. If only you knew how many years I searched for the perfect pet and then found Aristotle, who I bought with my own money, only so Dad could lose him 3 years later. The hours I spent picking the perfect name and making him his Christmas stocking. All for Dad to lose him. I can't believe he's gone. I loved him so much. Every detail, his nails, his legs, his eyes, the way he slept. He was the best. Aristotle was the pet I was going to have forever. Tortoises' lifespans can go for over 50 years, and Mom always used to joke about how I would have to will him to my grandchildren, and now I won't be able to. I just keep thinking about how Mom and I were doing a make-your-own cement stepping stone kit last night, and how I considered doing a footprint of Aristotle to remember him forever, but I thought I wouldn't do it then because I'd have so many more chances to. I think about everything I did for him, the story I wrote, the social studies webpage he inspired. And now those things are all that's left. This has been the worst day. Not only did Aristotle get lost, but I got hit in the ear with a tennis ball and I'm getting my period. later, same day. It's 10:17 p.m., and he's still not here. It's the unknowing that makes it worse. If I knew for sure he wasn't coming back, I could make myself move on. I see his empty cage and lamp and bowl and say, no, he wasn't just a tortoise, he was Aristotle. I made him a little wooden house, and I had his photo taken at Family Picture Day. Yes, this is professionally shot. Aristotle moved and ate and drank and was my friend. Roses are red, violets are blue. Good night, my lost Aristotle. I love you. So, we never found Aristotle.
I had really elaborate funerals for all of my other pets, and I never had any sort of funeral or service for Aristotle. I think because even to this day, part of me thinks that he could maybe still be alive somewhere.
So EB never got closure about Aristotle, and partially because of that traumatic experience, she's made it a personal mission to understand how others find closure.
I am currently working on writing a nonfiction book. I started researching different ways that people mourn their animals, either with pet cemeteries or mummification or taxidermy, or you can get artificial diamonds made from your pet's ashes.
Of course, EB never had any of those options with Aristotle. But we wondered, if given the chance to mourn him or any other pet, how would she do it today?
I think one of the things with mourning animals is sometimes you feel like you're the only person who's felt this sad about losing a dog or losing a tortoise. And because people don't talk about it in the same way that they talk about, you know, missing their mom when their mom dies. And so I think that when an animal dies and people reach out to you and you can have some sort of ceremony or gathering to remember that animal, I think that's really a nice thing you can do.
Full-blown funerals filled with crowds of dressed-up mourners and printed services are not as uncommon as you might think. In fact, it turns out our own Hadley Dion attended a ceremony just like this when she was a kid. And it's something she'll never forget.
Our neighbor's dog died when I was eight, and this dog funeral was like a big production. There were probably at least 35 people there. We all sat in a circle and we talked about this man's dog for a couple hours, and then there were refreshments.
Hadley even wrote a poem for the occasion. So we thought we'd close today's show by providing a little closure for all of you out there who've loved and lost. In memory of Aristotle, Rainbow, and Spunky, here's Dogs Go to Heaven Too by Hadley Dion, age 8.
Dogs go to heaven like love in the air. Dogs go to heaven with their hearts. Dogs go to heaven no matter what. Dogs spread the world joy. You will see tears on heaven's dogs. Dogs go to heaven no matter what. At this moment, all these things are happening.
As always, all the childhood writings heard in today's episode are 100% real. No embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness. To share the shame, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or visit getmortified.com to learn about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and who knows, maybe you'll appear on a future episode of this series. As many of you know, the Mortified Podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp. Thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad-serving platform to Radiotopia. If you're a company and you'd like to support our podcast, we'd love that. Email sponsor at radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Hadley Dion, Shelby El Otmani, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Catcher. Feature readers include Jen Ponton, E.B. Bartels, and Adam Rubin, who you can also hear in episodes 6 and 72. Thanks to all the folks we interviewed about their pets, Hannah Haas, Aaron Whitehead, Deborah Dion, and Christian Hayden. Stories were produced for the stage by Sarah Faith Alterman and Siobhan O'Malley. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snake, Snake, Snakes, which are three words I'd never want as pets. Big thanks to Lance Roberts Studios and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survived. Except for Rainbow, Spunky, and let's face it, probably Aristotle.
I miss you, Buffy.
I miss you, Casey.
I miss you, fish I never named.